I was fortunate to play at a very good basketball school. And then you go away and you coach and you think that, you know, if I ever had a chance to coach here at Maryland, it'd be great. But I never thought I'd have the opportunity to come back and coach at Maryland.
Trimble with 3 seconds. Trimble for the win! Cowabunga!
A sellout crowd of 43,000 cheers Queen Elizabeth and her consort Prince Philip. Very special guests of the University of Maryland.
90 seconds to go. Vasquez for three in the lead. 78-77 Maryland.
I believe that the Terrapin is the loveliest, perhaps the most beautiful of all trees.
There's Wells to jump out, make the depth, and slam it. Yikes. Brown will take it inside the five. Touchdown, Maryland. Terrapins beat Virginia Tech.
And no handshake for the coin toss from Maryland before the game today. It is on.
Okay, grab shell, dude.
Ha-ha! Righteous! Righteous!
And breaking free for the touchdown is Jay Sean Jones on his first touch as a Terp.
You're listening to Inside Maryland Sports Radio.
Hey guys, it's Paul here, IMS Radio. I've got producer Schwenk with us. I got Jeff Herman with us. I've got Ahmed Gafir. The whole team is here to mourn the death of the basketball and spring sports seasons. Maybe that metaphor wasn't apropos given what's going on, but here we are. We have the whole crew and we have literally nothing to talk about. But instead of, you know, talking about the NCAA tournament and what would be happening, hours from now on Wednesday the 18th here. Let's talk about what might have happened. It was only about a week ago, Jeff, but it feels like maybe it was a month ago. It's been like the
week in history.
It's unbelievable how much the world has changed in 7 days. But, you know, we were sitting there watching the Big Ten tournament start up. They played the first full day. And that second day, I'm sitting in my office. We turn on Big Ten Network. They had the teams on the court. Like, you know, they didn't have fans in the stands or anything, but the games were ready to go on. And then you see the teams leaving. And then Dave Revson's like, oh, well, they just canceled the whole bloody thing. And then you knew by that point that the NCAA tournament was not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it just does not seem possible to me that it still has not been a full week since they canceled the NCAAs. That's incredible. According to ESPN, though, Maryland got to the Final Four, so there's your good news, right? Everybody can celebrate that. I'm sure that means a lot to everybody. Simulation they had. It's a simulation, you know. I'm a big...
You going to talk about how that ended, though?
Well, the ending was even more ridiculous. They had Wisconsin over BYU in the finals, which is, you know, the tournament is wild. Crazy stuff like that has happened, but, I mean, that's pretty far out there.
Virginia white players in the final since, like, the 40s.
BYU, Virginia, and Wisconsin, yeah. They had Maryland losing to Wisconsin on another Brad Davison dagger, just to really troll all the Maryland fans. And then they had... BYU beating Virginia and Wisconsin, which, you know, Wisconsin is not going to win a national championship. But the other simulations had, I think, Sportsline, which I trust a little more. I mean, it doesn't matter. None of them mean anything, but they had Dayton winning it all. So it's funny. I posted in and somebody's like, oh, you really want to make us feel worse about things, you know, that they would. I'm like, I got to write about something. Thank God I got like Ahmed killing it with whatever recruiting news there is. And I'm finding scraps here and there, but yeah, at this point we have no choice but to write about like simulations. And people are doing like someone's doing the entire bracket on, what is it, like 2010, whatever the 2010 video game was. So they must be like creating all the players on all these teams and stuff. Yeah. And I guarantee you a ton of people are probably going to watch that. It's just, this is a painful, painful time for college basketball and sports fans in general.
I will say Jeff Ehrman has been doing yeoman's work on InsideMarylandSports.com trying to get some content up there. Man, it's like every minute I see something new, and I know that like it's just killing you inside. But I want you to know that I appreciate the effort because...
thank you. Like I said, Ahmed's been killing it too, and there's still been some... decent stuff. I mean, some of it's, you know, whatever, but there's NFL free agency. There's transfer. There's a lot of transfer stuff popping out now, which I'll have a story up on basketball transfers on Thursday. And so there's some stuff going on, but you know, the summer is always pretty brutal for a good 2 to 3 months when stuff's really not happening. And this is just going to extend that by an extra month or so, or month and a half, who knows. But yeah, we're still finding things to write about.
Well, you know, if we're talking big picture here, let me bring in our celebrity producer, Mr. Charles Taylor Schwenk, who has been living it up in the home of the worldwide leader, basically trading in this garden variety crap podcast for some legit ass podcast. What I think you've been doing the Dockage thing. You've done some football stuff. What are you doing up there on the normal now?
Oh boy. So right now, so let's start at the beginning. When I first got up
what
there,
were you doing when you had content?
Hey, well, we're still working on some content. I'm doing the Daily Baseball Tonight podcast with Buster Olney, and we're doing some storytelling. We had David Fries on today to talk about Game 6, the 2011 World Series, where he basically saved the whole thing for the Cardinals. It was pretty wild. So I do that on a day-to-day basis. I do our golf podcast with Matt Barry and Michael Collins. Had Tony Finau on today talking to him about going stir crazy with his children, just like everyone else in this country. And then I was doing courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. Love those guys. They like to stir shit up a little bit. So I know when we had Turgeon on, that's where the whole Turgeon complaining. God, what did he even complain about again? I don't even remember. He was complaining. Oh, he's complaining about.
You have to have a list. It's Turge, man.
Michigan State, Ohio State. Bullying and the Cowan technical, right?
Yeah, called him a bully. And then Chris Holtman responded. So that was a whole thing. So, yeah, I mean, that was a really dramatic shift for me. I mean, I was in there the last night of the regular season. That was on a Sunday. And, we were like, we got to get something out on Monday morning. And, you know, that quickly snowball melted, actually, by midweek. So I have not even talked to those guys since then. We had grand plans for the tournament. We were going to be podcasting every night, and it just it all went away like everything else. So
you've blown up on us, man. You were just a young pup when you came to us not very long ago. Now you're like, you're gonna take Van Pelt's job in a couple years, dude.
I was begging for scraps. You, man. Thanks, guys. Yeah, and I still like being involved. I mean, this is, let's be real, guys. This is the most listened to Maryland Terrapins podcast on the entire internet. So I got to have my fingerprints on it. So I appreciate you guys keeping me in the fold in a little bit and letting me, work off a little bit of boredom, a little bit of stir craziness with y'all tonight.
Well, I mean, it's going to be like a fucking poetry podcast before too long, because there's not going to be much to talk about here. So let me ask you, though, you know, just being up in Bristol and kind of in, you know, I mean, that's kind of the heartbeat of the American sports community. Like, what's the feeling like up there? This has got to be really strange.
It's pretty bizarre, man. I mean, you know, the tournament gets canceled. I think that was last Thursday. So we were in the office then and kind of like, what are we doing here? Are we coming back in tomorrow? And because I do the baseball show, you know, most of our pods don't do anything on Friday. So I was in the office on Friday and it was just bizarre. There was nobody around. I did end up recording 3 different podcasts just because there was nobody there. And yeah, it was very eerie. And now, I mean, I haven't been back since Friday. They've basically mandated, you know, you can't go into the office. I think we had one producer run in to record a podcast with Adam Schefter, but that was really it. So I think there are 2 people basically working the national ESPN radio station right now, just wandering the halls, and the rest of us are at home. Unfortunately, I have this home setup, which has proved very handy. But yeah, everyone's just kind of down and just kind of trying to figure out how to fill the time. The NFL folks, you know, obviously they've got a lot to talk about. But fortunately, my guy Buster, his Rolodex is fat. So he was like, I want to talk to David Fries. I'm going to get him. So he grabbed him. No problem. We got David Wells on Friday. He wants to get Howie Kendrick next week to talk about, his grand slam and hitting the pole in the World Series. So, I mean, we're trying to be creative, but it's definitely a little bit dour. I mean, there truly is nothing to talk about, and it's very weird.
I tried to twink up good stories on Dan Dockage being an asshole, but he wouldn't give me anything.
Yeah,
firsthand.
Dockage is a very nice guy, and he gets a lot of crap, and he's he's an entertainer, and that's he'll say that to anyone. He's an entertainer first and foremost. It's how he, you know, cashes his checks, and he's good at it. So, and I think Maryland fans like him. So whatever.
No, I like Dockage. I always figured he was probably a good dude who was just trolling people most of the time. Like, I'm fine with that if that's true.
It's definitely true. He's just he just likes to get people riled up. That's all. Nothing wrong.
By
with
the
that.
Way. Just as a as an aside, when it comes to ESPN, I did have ESPN on the office TV the other day, and Mike and Mike or Mike and or Golic and Wingo, I guess now it's called now, in the mornings, and it was on the TV, but they had, you know, because they didn't have everybody in the studio, they had, you know, they clearly were Skyping or having satellites or whatever to get the three of them together. And all morning they were having all types of problems with the sound and like with echoes and all this stuff. And I laughed my ass off thinking finally these big budget jerks know what it's like to be us. Like try doing this shit on Skype every week, bitches.
They're all huddled in Golic Senior's basement. And it's pretty interesting actually, because I mean, we, you know, you guys know the struggles of Skype and just even recording podcasts remotely. Like, you know, a lot of my coworkers, they've worked in radio their whole lives, so to do remote recordings is completely foreign to them. So it's definitely been an interesting process here, and you know, a lot of my coworkers have leaned on me for my advice and my expertise a little bit. Not to shoot my own horn too much, but it's been wild. It's back to the basement. Literally, I'm in my basement right now, and who knows how long this will last.
Well, I mean, definitely toot your own horn, because we're taking credit for you and all of your success, as well as we're taking credit for that 9-game winning streak this year. I mean, it's been a pretty goddamn successful year for this podcast, I will say.
I'm glad I was just out of the way for you guys. That was all you, for sure. I was editing it, and I was like, oh my God, they're right. They totally turned this thing around, and Mark Turgeon knows it deep down in his soul.
Somewhere, as he's listening to this, like, tomorrow, he's going to be like, you know what? Those fucking guys were right. They did it. They saved my job. They got me an extension. You're welcome, Mark. Happy to help. Okay, enough of the funeral for now. Maryland's basketball season is over, but why don't we talk about the season a little bit while we're here? Maryland did finish number 12 in the final AP poll, which again is very sad, given this is the day that I would typically be flying out to Las Vegas to watch the tournament. Not bad. I believe it ties their mark from, 14-15, Jeff? Is that right?
Yep.
Okay. So Turgeon's tied for his best mark. Quite possibly, I think, we could consider... I mean, you just don't know, because there's no tournaments. I mean, there's no tournaments. I don't know how to judge this thing. I mean, Maryland cuts down a net at the end of the season. That feels really good. They win their last game convincingly against a good team. That feels really good. But I don't know if Mark was going to blow in the tournament again, or if he was going to make all of us look silly. How the hell am I supposed to judge this season?
He had a teleconference Monday, and he said, you know, we could have lost in the first round, or we could have gone to the final four, which is 100% true. I don't think they would have lost in the first round, but it's, you know, it's not outside the realm of possibility. But yeah, that's definitely the range. So there's just no way. It's total incomplete grade on the season. And it's really funny, because this was the season all year long. Well, it's just going to, everybody you talk to me about, I tell them same thing. It all is going to come down to the postseason. If he does okay, wins a couple games, he'll get his extension, whatever. If he goes on a deep run, you know, he'll win some people over, probably get a better extension. If they go one and done or out in the first weekend, then we'll see. It might be get really interesting here in the spring. But it's all going to come down to the, and then, you know, so in a way you could definitely argue that, not that he's happy about it, but that it benefited him. In fact, you could definitely say it benefited him, unless Damon Evans, you know, pulls some move, some shocking move of firing him, which isn't happening, or just completely stiffs him in negotiations and Turgeon does something drastic. I don't see that happening either. So, you know, it's kind of funny how I think it probably worked in his favor from a job security standpoint.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. Because, you know, even if say, you know, they did what they were supposed to do in the tournament, you know, go get to a Sweet 16, like that would have been fine, but I'm not sure that would have changed anybody's minds as to whether Turge was like the guy if they would get to a Sweet 16 and lose that game. So probably the benefit of not playing helps him because it eliminates the things that would have really lit people's hair on fire.
Yeah, you say we won a Big Ten championship, which they did, even though it was a share. And, you know, that's how the season went. Successful season. Bam. You know, sentence over. So.
I get it. And, you know, you can't take that away. It's, you know, it feels a lot like those kind of mid to late Edsel era seasons where, you know, he picked up a couple good wins against team, you know, big name teams. And everybody was just kind of like, okay, he's been here for 3 or 4 years. Like, you just need to like either put out or completely fail so we can decide whether we're going to fire you or not. And then, you know, all the quarterbacks would get hurt and we'd be starting a linebacker by game 11. It's like, well, you know, you can't totally blame Edsel for that, you know? So like, you can't totally judge Turgeon in a way because he never got his chance to succeed or fail at doing the thing that basically everybody feels like he needs to do if he's going to be here for the super long term.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, it really complicates things now. You know, imagine
it's not fair in a way. I mean, it's not fair to us. You never got to know whether he could do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Really, you know, one extreme or the other in the tournament would have made all the difference in his trajectory. So now what do you think? If you're Damon, you probably give him, you know, 1 or 2 years less guaranteed, obviously, because Kevin Anderson just gave him, you know, 100% guaranteed security for, you know, at that time, what was 6 years, I think, 3 extra years.
Yeah.
On top of 3 that he had left. But yeah, we don't know. Like, this was clearly his best team, and we don't know what he could do. And unless there's a miracle and Jalen Smith comes back, we're still not going to know next year unless he pulls out, you know, 3 really good players from the transfer market or recruits. We're still not going to know because next year there's very little chance his team will be as good or better as this year's.
Yep. Hold that thought. We're going to get there. But do you have any specific info on the contract? I mean, as I look at this and I try and be more dispassionate about it, because I mean, you know, look, whatever you feel about Turgeon as a long-term scenario here, I mean, this was a fun season for the most part. So yeah. I respect that. I credit him for that. I look at the extension idea. It's like, you have to, if he's going to stay here and coach, you have to give him an extension of some kind. But the market is kind of the thing that determines this, right? You know, Crofton, a poster on the InsideMarylandSports.com message board said, mentioned this in one of the threads. The market determines what kind of, you know, contract position you put him in. Like, do we feel like there's a giant market for Mark Turgeon's coaching services right now? I mean, probably not. I'm sure that there are some schools out there in the P5 world who would happily take him if he was available. But you know, I don't think anybody's knocking.
Trying to steal him away from you. Not to involve him, but that's just the reality. I don't think that there's a huge crowd of suitors trying to chase him down. So, you know, I think, and the other thing is that he loves it at Maryland. His family loves the area. He's cemented there, you know. So I don't think he's going to leave over a few nickels and dimes. You know, he's obviously he's going to try to get whatever he can, but you know, I don't think you're going to have to give him the world to stick around before he tries to take the next job, because I think he wants to be in Maryland.
Well, right, and I say all of that leading up to a point about the buyout. I mean, the buyout's the whole thing if you're a Maryland fan, right? You want to be able to toss a guy if he's not doing the job. So. Yeah. The reason you would have a high buyout is not only to protect that coach from getting fired, but from, you know, protect the school from someone trying to snap him up. And if you've got a situation where it doesn't look like Turge wants to go anywhere and it doesn't look like anybody wants to try and coach steal, there really isn't a point to try and negotiate a giant buyout. So Damon Evans might be able to get away with saying, okay, you know, obviously your next 3 years are covered regardless, but after that, that's either going down big time or it's going to go away. And then you might be able to bump his salary a little bit and, you know, kind of make an extension kind of like Randy Edsel's was, where you bump the years out, give him a little bit more salary, but the buyout basically stays the same and kind of decreases as the years go on.
Yeah, Damon, clearly Maryland slash Damon has most of the leverage there. It's like there's going to be some outcry about it if it seems like he's lowballing Turgeon from what we've seen from the fan base. So clearly he does. I mean, he's not, you know, and you're not dealing with Kevin Anderson again, who is like, you know, the college AD version of Daniel Snyder signing free agents. You know, he's a lot sharper than Kevin Anderson was. So
he's like Principal Skinner.
Yeah, exactly. So
it's terrible.
They'll come up with something. I mean, unless it just completely falls apart and, you know, say like Kansas State back close to home comes open or something like that. You know, you just never know this time of year. Crazy things happen. But my assumption is it'll get done. Then again, who knows how the current situation with everything being shut down, you know, whether that slows things down in the process or maybe even speeds them up because you're thinking, all right, let's just get this done and, you know, move on. So that's another, you know, unusual variable to it. But, you know, it would be pretty surprising. And I wouldn't have said this a few months ago, obviously, before they went on that hot streak. I felt like anything could happen with him after the season, but it'd be pretty surprising if anything else happened.
You're welcome, Mark. Okay, so talking about what else is going on at the end of this season, Anthony Cowan in the rafters. We've got four of us on here. I need votes from everyone, starting with Jeff Ehrman, as well as any intelligence you have heard about this from within the program.
Yeah, too soon for any intel about it, but I'd say you have to. You know, he hasn't been an All-American. You know, I can never figure out if those are like ironclad.
No. You go up in the rafters if the coach wants you in the rafters or if some old white hairs want to throw up some money for it.
Yeah, exactly. So he didn't get the All-American status. He didn't have the great team success, which that really sucks for him not having a chance to do that.
Never know.
This year. Yeah, you never know what he would have done. I mean, he got that Big Ten title, so at least he got something to his name in terms of a team accomplishment. But just given what he did and all of his stats, which, you know, top 10 in scoring, top 10 in assists, three-pointers made. I think he's number one all time in three-pointers and free throws made. Definitely free throws. Yeah, he's got to go up.
Schwenk?
Without a doubt. I think, you know, just having, you know, he's got an incredible body of work, but to cap it off with the Big Ten regular season title, something Mark Turgeon will tell you, you know, regular season titles don't come around very often. So he does have a point. He does have a point, guys. So I think that as the feather in Anthony Cowan's hat puts him up there.
Ahmed.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree, especially like Schwenk said, being able to give Maryland, being an integral piece to give Maryland that first conference championship in the Big Ten. Plus over his 4 years, his body of work and just being that another point guard that especially after Melo, what he's been able to do consistently for 4 years. And I still think that he was able to elevate his game this year. But I just think the whole body of work and being a local guy and, you know, I think just kind of being the heart of the team. I think he deserves it.
I also think he goes up. I think he goes up next year. I don't think it's much of a question. You know, the personal journey he was on in a way from, you know, being really useful as a freshman to kind of struggling to kind of take the reins as a point guard, and then his development to in his kind of becoming what was really a you know, first team all Big Ten, excellent quality player senior year, who said he was coming back and he was going to get himself a ring, and he went and he got himself a ring. So hats off to Anthony Cowan.
Well, I would say this. Melo has not been raised, right? His jersey hasn't been honored, unless I'm forgetting.
No, he's up there, isn't he?
Is he up there? Did I totally forget about that? He's not on the list I have in front of me.
Melo? No, he's not up there.
Really?
I don't think he has. No, so he hasn't. The two of them are very comparable, although it's always impossible comparing 3-year guys and 4-year guys. And then you look at the list. Here's the other point guards I see. You got Gravis, Steve Blake, Juan Dixon, not a point guard, but Steve Francis. That one can be argued. He was only 1 year. It didn't end that well. So that one felt like a little more of a branding thing or whatever you want to call it than anything. But so like, this is not detracting from Cowan. I'm not quite sure he's the level of great player of most of these guys you see up there. Tom McMillan, Len Elmore, John Lucas, Albert King, Buck Williams. You know, I'm not sure he's necessarily on that level of greatness, but just the like swing bench and the body work, and just starting every game of his career, things like that are hard to ignore. You almost seem like you're fighting against him if you don't put him up. Although Adrian Branch still isn't up there, which is one of the greatest mysteries in Maryland basketball, right?
I tried, man. I tried so hard on that one, and it just
very strange.
Yeah, Branch just got lost in the sauce of the bias thing, and that's a real tragedy that should be fixed. Hint, hint. Somebody with like $500,000, go do that. Yeah. How the hell is Melo not up there? I did not know that Melo was not up there. That's really strange. I thought that he was he might have been a third team All American or at least honorable mention, wasn't he?
I think his freshman year he was maybe on one second team.
Yeah,
second team, but yeah. I'm surprised. Turgeon. Well, who knows if maybe he has lobbied for it, but he's not up there. As well as obviously, when you look at these guys, these are like legend. Oh, Johnny Rhodes is on there. He's probably fairly comparable, I would say. You know,
yeah, Johnny Rhodes is kind of the guy who gets the participation award in the rafters. Like, you know, he was just a guy who kind of never was a leader on a team, but was always like the second or third best player on a bunch of good teams.
Really good team. Yeah, that's the thing. He had more team success.
Right. You know, I think you could argue that Melo belongs up there because he kind of was the one who brought Maryland back into a team that is expected to make the tournament every year. Kind of back where we feel like Maryland should be where their baseline should be.
So if you have to pick one, who do you put up there between those two?
And that's a tough one. You know why? Because Melo's best year was his freshman year, and then he kind of got a little worse each year after that. Whereas Cowan kind of had a much more relatively gradual development curve. And, you know, I'm not sure Melo's junior year left a great taste in a lot of people's mouths. Maybe that's just me. I just thought it was a no-brainer that because of his influence on the program and when he showed up and what he did when he was here, that he would be up there. Am I alone in that? I don't know.
No, I would think that he would go up there at some point. If I have to pick one, I'm probably going Melo just because program was like flatlining and he almost single-handedly resuscitated it. And I think he's just generally, you know, just flat out, I think he's just generally a little bit better player. I think Cowan was a little bit better player, even for his flaws, although it's pretty close. But I'd probably give it to, but they'll both end up there, I would think.
I'd love to look at that stats comparison because it seemed like they both had kind of a number of moments, you know, game-winning three-pointers or, you know, ice cold foul shots, things like that they made. It just, again, it always felt like Melo's were like early in his career and towards the end, he didn't do as well. He didn't shoot as well. Whereas Cowan, that during that 9-game winning streak was as good as I think we've seen a Maryland point guard play. And as long as I can remember, that's an interesting one. So you have the two of them hanging out there. I don't think Des Wells is even in the conversation, to be honest with you.
No, probably not. Maybe if he had been there 4 years and got there when they were having more success, you know, his first 2 years were pretty much, you know, on NIT. One of those teams might not have even made the NIT.
One of them didn't make it at all. And then the other one, I think, was kind of went to the Final Four in the NIT, right? Was that the...
Yeah, and then he came along for Melo's freshman year, and that was it. So now he doesn't.
Right.
He doesn't have a chance.
Yeah, so, okay. What about Sticks? What's the feeling there? I want everybody on this. All-American won multiple teams. Only 2 years, probably. We'll get to that.
I would put him up there. You know, I was going to say no because of 2 years, but he was so good this year. Third-team All-American. Flat-out one of the best big men that they've ever had. So, you know, even at 2 years without much great team success, I would.
Schwenk?
I'm going to lean no just because of the 2 years. I think maybe you hold off, and if he's a stud in the NBA, then maybe that kind of fills out where his college resume lacks in the eyes of Maryland fans. I mean, obviously, he has a very special place in Maryland lore, but I don't know. I think 2 years is tough. I mean, he was great, no doubt, but I don't know. I feel like you really got to be here all four, or you have to have just an insane three. And I think Melo fits that bill because he did save the program, essentially. So I don't know. Sticks is in kind of a tricky spot there in terms of going up in the rafters.
Steve Francis is on the line, and he says you're wrong. Imagine.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of disagree that he should go up just because, kind of like Schwing said, I don't necessarily agree that it has to be a 4-year player, but, you know, it's not like he was like the impact guy. I mean, even last year, he wasn't even the best big man on the team. So I felt that even though this year he did, I think Maryland fans will obviously remember him, and this would be a memorable season largely because of what that jump that he was able to make. But I don't think that going up there is deserving just yet.
I think that not having these tournaments cost him a chance to really earn that right. If he really was able to put it up when he kind of, you know, was in the moment, a national spotlight, being able to be that guy. And I think he would have. I mean, he was as good as anybody this year. I can't think of really all but one or two games this season that he was not really at his best. I kind of feel like, I think Schwenk's probably right in that, you know, look, you don't have to put these guys up in the rafters like immediately, or like, you know, their eligibility is gone, like the Hall of Fame or something. Like, you know, Ernie Graham just got up, what, 2 or 3 years ago, and he graduated in the 70s. So I think you would put Sticks on hold a little bit. And, it, you know, maybe a few years down the line, you decide to throw him up there, especially if you don't have any other guys kind of waiting in the wings. But that's a tough one. That's a tough one.
You know what kills all these guys, what kills anybody who's played at Maryland in the past dozen or so years who's been really good, is they haven't had, and nobody's made a deep run in the tournament.
Yep.
You know, that's so, you know, you're looking for great players, but in the back of your head, you're also counting team success. Then you look at the guys that are up there, you know, Joe Smith, Keith Booth, Johnny Rhodes, Juan Dixon, Lonnie Baxter, Steve Blake, Gravis, these guys all run really good teams, so none of these guys have that memorable tournament run to kind of push them over to push their legacy over the top.
Did Terrence Morris ever make it up there?
Nope.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah, he's ranked higher than anybody I think realizes in several stats. I mean, he's way up there.
He was good for a long time. He just never quite was like the best guy on that team. And I, you know, kind of a quiet guy too, didn't really stick out. But yeah, I mean, there's certainly some good players who have been left out of the rafters that you could make arguments that they certainly belong there. So that'll be interesting looking forward. All right, let's get to the thing. I don't think this is going to happen, but just for discussion's sake, Jeff, if they were to mysteriously offer seniors a chance to come back, do you think Cowan would do it?
I don't think he would do it. No, I think he's been around long enough, graduated a year ago already. So
he could get another, he could get a doctorate or something, right?
Yeah, talking about hanging around 2 extra years. He's pretty much maxed out his potential as a professional player. The point is going to be moot because they're not going to do it. At first, I was totally in favor of it in the moment of like realizing that the tournament was getting canceled. But the more I've thought about it, you know, it's just such a logistical nightmare. You have what's going to happen. So then you give these guys another year just because they missed probably what really amounts to about one game each on average, or 2 games each, given how the postseason works. Then you're costing the guys behind them, you know, basically not costing them a season, but you're costing them a lot of the opportunity they would have had if these guys had cleared the path in front of them for them to play more and play bigger roles. And then you got scholarship limits, and then you're going to have freshmen who are signing places who want out because some guys coming back at their position. And then you have the record books, you know, all of a sudden you've got for the first time ever guys who played 5 whole years. So, you know, they're going to be screwing up all the records. And so long story short, I don't think he would, but I don't think it's going to happen anyways.
All right. So let's get to the question of the moment. on everyone's mind, even though we've been telling them it's been inevitable. What's Stick's going to do, man? I will say I've been really surprised at his basically not being considered a first round lock anywhere that I can see on NBA draft boards, you know, mock drafts, things like that. I thought the way that he played this year basically would cement him as that just perfect NBA long athlete kind of, you know, even just a, like a 3-and-D kind of guy. I just don't see him on there, and I'm shocked. And I'm no NBA expert by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm surprised that he's considered to, or is rated as low as he is. And I guess it just, you can't help but just wondering whether maybe that changes his mind on top of the fact that he didn't get a chance to make a run in the tournament this year.
On top of the fact that he's probably not going to get a chance to work out for teams anytime soon and boost his stock. So, I mean,
preface this with all of the things we've been saying all year about he gone. But things have changed a lot in the past couple weeks. So I just throwing it out there.
Yeah, and you wonder if that, because he's definitely, you know, definitely from a family that has stressed not rushing to the NBA and education, and they love Maryland, and he is a guy who really wanted to win big at Maryland. You know, during the season, going into the season, he was definitely gone. I assume he still probably goes when it's all said and done, but you do wonder if maybe the dynamics of how things ended and the fact he won't be able to work out for anybody or boost his stock anytime soon, whereas he would have had a chance to go to the combine and probably perform well and easily jump into the first round, which I agree. It's crazy to me that everybody has him as a late first, early second rounder. I'm going to talk to Jonathan Givony, I should know how to say his last name, but he's ESPN's draft guru, pretty soon here about that for a story. But, I'm trying to find out right now. You know, I've been working it, reaching out to some people close to him, so I'm hoping to have at least an idea of what he's thinking pretty soon. But it does, you know, maybe make things interesting, just all the uncertainty now, you know, that wasn't there a month ago.
Right now, assuming that things do get somewhat back to normal or something resembling normal, he already did the NBA draft thing, combine thing last year, right? So he can't do that again and come back, correct? Year. He didn't. No, okay.
He skipped it all together last year.
Cowan did, right?
People Cowan in his position would have gone. So that kind of illustrates what I was talking about, that he, you know, the whole not being one of these kids who's obsessed with getting the NBA right at his first chance. On the flip side, he pretty much dominated this year. So it's not going to be like come back and show more. I mean, he's pretty much shown what he can do. I mean, obviously anybody with his talent, you're going to come back, you're going to have put up better numbers and show a little bit more, but you know, it's not like a situation where he really has a lot of motivation to come back from that point of view. So I still assume he'll be gone, but you know, if he did come back, next year would take on a whole different look, wouldn't it?
It would certainly be a little more intriguing than it looks at the moment.
It wouldn't be a little more. You'd have a first team All-American, you know, big man on your team, arguably player of the year, legit player. I mean, he was top 10 in player of the year this year. He'd be a top 5 player in the country next year. And if you have all of a sudden those other guys who are your core right now, Wiggins and Morsell and Dante Scott, those would be all of a sudden your complimentary guys around him. That's a top 5, top 10 team.
No, it's not.
If you bring him back, absolutely a top 10.
No way. Who's getting him the ball?
Agree.
Which Ayala do I get? Do I get the Michigan Ayala or the like month of February Ayala?
That's still the big question, obviously. And, you know, they're trying to do something there with Bryce Aiken, you know, from Harvard, point guard, who's probably the best guard available on the transfer market. He put up 30 against Maryland last year in Orlando this past season. But even with that unresolved, there's not many junior Jalen Smith kind of players in college basketball. And then Wiggins already has some hype, and these other guys are pretty known commodities. I mean, to me, that's probably a top 10 team. Hopefully, you know, hopefully for our sake of enjoyment, we'll be able to argue that, you know, in real terms.
Yes. I'm definitely here for the argument over how good Maryland would be if Sticks comes back. That is an argument I would be very happy to have. I don't know, man. I just the point guard thing is just driving me crazy. And maybe Terge will pull another rabbit out of his hat in the spring like he always seems to do. But
I think he's got to get another point guard. I'm sure he knows that. You know, he got.
If I see Daryl Morsell playing point guard in spring and summer practice, I'm going to be pissed.
I don't think that's happened. I think he knows. I mean, he knows. Aquan Smart is a total crapshoot. You don't know what he's going to be. He looks like he could be good. He's not the kind of profile of recruit who typically comes in and starts at point guard as a freshman in the Big Ten. And then Ayala is what he is at this point. So he's going to have to. It's just a matter of how good the guy he gets is.
All right. So you'd like to think. I mean, we don't know because the schedule's so messed up and we don't even know where these combine things are going to happen. So, but we do know that Styx could, in theory, go and make himself eligible for combine type events and workouts, but still come back because he hasn't utilized that option yet, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So he could do that, or he could just go right away, or he could just come back. But I assume we would hope to know something within the next month or so, right? Is that typically how this goes?
Yeah, it usually doesn't drag. I mean, obviously this is different. There's not going to probably be the sort of deadlines there usually are, but I doubt it. You know, he leaves it open-ended for too long.
Right. Okay. Okay. Well, looking at the current roster, on top of losing Cowan and potentially Styx, what other attrition are we looking at this point based on your knowledge?
There's nobody known to be leaving. You know, there's this, people speculate about the same kind of guys every year, the guys who you thought would be maybe with faring a little bit better and with slightly larger roles this year. That would be, you know, Ricky Lindo, Sorrell Smith, and Josh Tomajic is kind of a different guy. He's a guy who's been around forever. Coach loves him, but, you know, this would be his fifth year. So is he going to come back? Is Turgeon the one to come back for a fifth year or just kind of let it? Go ahead and let that expire. Let him move on. Try to play somewhere else. I don't know. Turgeon really does seem to have a fondness for him. So I could see him maybe coming back for that fifth year. And then Sorrell Smith, I think, will be back. He seems to be competitive and, you know, a guy who wants to be around. Obviously, though, he probably could find a larger role somewhere else. And then Ricky Lindo is one who's considered transferring in the past, according to people I trust. So that's kind of one to watch. I do think, you know, I wrote something about him the other day. I do think he'll probably be back. I think it would be wise for him to come back because when you look at the front court now, he's got all the opportunity in the world. You know, if he's good enough to play 30 minutes, which is a big question mark, he'll play 30 minutes, especially if Jalen Smith leaves. They've got very little up there in the front court. So that's a really interesting one to watch. Shaul Marriott, I have no reason to believe he's leaving. Last year, this was basically just a redshirt, get healthy year for him. So, you know, it doesn't seem like one of those off seasons where you see a bunch of guys leave.
Hey, guys, remember the Mitchell twins? That happened. That happened actually 2.5 years ago. You didn't know that.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. That's another thing. So now this off season would have been, or this recruiting period would have been pretty slow, but now, you know, you have those two extra scholarships to work with, and you got to get I think at least two big guys if Jalen Smith leaves.
All right, so let's talk about the transfer portal and other spring Turgeon, you know, back of the hand options that we got going on here. They had Patrick Tape come in. He was a big man grad transfer from Columbia. Is that true?
Yeah.
Columbia. And then you got Bryce Aiken, who I believe everybody is basically after at this point, other grad transfer. Do we have any idea on potential timelines for those guys or any other guys that they're looking at pretty seriously?
No, I mean, it's always hard with transfers to get a real feel for when they're going to decide. And then now with everything, none of these guys can take any visits anywhere. So how do you decide if you're a transfer? You know, so I assume the vast majority of them will wait until they can actually go see these schools. So that, and there's six or seven other guys. There's guys all over the place. Maryland's reached out to a kid named Kevin Marfo at Quinnipiac, was the leading rebounder in the country this year. They inquired about him. There's a guard from Wichita State who put up about 13 a game who they're interested in. Seth Towns, everybody wants
the other Harvard transfer. I don't think that they're going to have a shot at him. I think he'll end up at Ohio State, although Duke apparently is now in the mix. Aiken is the guy, though. I mean, that to me is the exciting guy. You need bigs, so any bigs you get are going to help. But, he is, to me, not really a significant drop-off, if any, from Cowan. So if you can get him, then all of a sudden, the outlook completely changes for next year.
Yeah, you get him and Six come back, and I'll give you a top five, top 10 team. There won't be much argument there.
Yeah, that's a top five team. Six comes back to top 10, though. Quote me. We'll bet a beer on that one.
Schwenk, mark the log.
Got it.
All right, guys. Well, let's try and put a bow on the season here. As weird as that sounds on March 18th, I'm just going to go across the board. I want you to tell me whether you feel like this season was a success and why or why not. Start with Ehrman.
That's a loaded question, man.
Sure is. That's why you get to go first, big boy. You get the big money.
It's a success. It's not a, like, unbridled breakthrough, like, magical season. Definitely a success anytime you win a conference title, even if you shared it. It was a success. That said, they didn't really necessarily outpour. I'm trying to remember what they started the season ranked at. What was it, 7 maybe? So, I think they were 7 in the first poll of the year. So you end up 12th. Right. So it's not like you greatly outperformed expectations. Then again, expectations are artificial anyway, so you still have to do it. And they did it. They had that great run. It was kind of uneven season. You're 10-0. Then you go through that slump, which was pretty bad. Then you win 9 in a row. Then you falter again, and then you win the final game to salvage a piece of the title. So it's a success, but it's not, the enormous breakthrough season kind of success.
Schwenk.
Definitely a success. Hang a banner equals success. It's Turgeon's first Big Ten title. I think that alone, I mean, he's annoying about it. As soon as they got their share, he was talking 1,000-pound gorilla. He's talking about how many regular season titles have been won at Maryland, and
don't remind me about this. That's gonna make me mad.
He's right,
again.
But he's right though. I mean,
but it's gonna make me mad again.
Yeah, I mean, it was a successful season. It wasn't the magical season that we wanted. It was not the 2010 ACC title season, which was also the shared title that nobody. I mean, it was shared, but like no one talks about that. I mean, I don't. When I think about that season, I don't think about the fact that it was shared. Maybe because of kind of the way they stumbled down the stretch here, we will think of it that way. But I mean, they still got the job done against Michigan. The Michigan State game was definitely a bummer. I will never think about the Rutgers game ever again. But I mean, there were just loads of good games this year. We had two studs on the team. Dante Scott was a nice surprise. Unfortunately, Wiggins and Ayala couldn't really hold up their end of the bargain, but it was all good. I enjoyed watching Maryland basketball for 91% of the season. And that's an A. That's an A for me. An A season. I loved it for the most part.
I'm mad.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's hard to say it wasn't. I mean, at the end of the day, they still rode a 9-game winning streak, still got to share the Big Ten. First conference championship in 10 years. And like Schwenk said, no one remembers the fact that in 2010, they also split it. I think part of the fact that they split it, on the night when it was Gravis' senior night, and the fact that they beat Duke in order to get there, I think that kind of maybe added to, the significance of it back then. But at the end of the day, I mean, if the beginning of conference play, if you would have made that bet that Maryland would have tied with Michigan State and Wisconsin for, a share of the Big Ten title, would you take it or leave it? Excuse me. Of course, everyone would say take it. And you have to kind of just consider the fact that, we don't have March. So at the end of the day, the last picture for the basketball team was getting a chance to cut down the nets at home. So I thought it was a pretty just cool ending for them. But yeah, in my mind, it's a clear success for me.
Yeah, I think that's right. And again, one of the things that you don't remember about the team from Gravis' senior years, that team struggled a little bit. They were kind of crapping in Maui that year and had a bunch of early losses. I think they lost to like William and Mary maybe, or somebody at home, somebody not great at home early that season. And it wasn't until the end of the season that they got super hot and kind of went on and won that thing. I think if Maryland's season had kind of gone that way without that little dip at the end, everybody would be feeling a lot different about it. But the Michigan game to me kind of made me feel that this season was right. Like, if you take those losses and you sprinkle them into the season instead of having a 9-game winning streak, basically the entire month of February, it still would have felt like Maryland had about the right record and probably, sure, they probably should have won that thing outright, but sharing it is not the end of the world. It wasn't like those losses were too bad when you look at the teams they were playing and the road conditions and things like that. So it was obviously a success. I just feel robbed by not knowing whether this team could be the one that could help Turgeon break through in the tournaments. And it's just a real shame that for Turgeon, as well as anybody else, that we just didn't get to know what this team was really made of and whether they could have gone on a run, because it's been so long since a Maryland team's really made a legit postseason run. It's hard to remember what one looks like. You know, take that for whatever you want to make of it. It was a lot of fun. I will say that it was a fun season, despite that, outside of that maybe 3 weeks in January that was kind of making you think like the whole thing might collapse upon itself. But they figured it out and they made a run in towards the end of the year, and that felt good. And winning that banner felt good, and watching those guys cut down nets felt good. And, you know, you can't take that stuff away. So good for them. Good for Turge. That's it. That's Maryland basketball in 2019, 2020. And now we got to see what kind of magic Turge can come up with to put together a team next year that doesn't, like, you know, struggle to get to the NIT. But we will go ahead and argue about that thing later on as well. Ahmed Ghaffir, this thing seems to have touched off on football as well. Spring practice and the spring game have all been postponed, potentially canceled. In-person recruiting visits are basically off limits. I kind of feel like Maryland's getting dogged here a little bit, because it looked like they were really getting a lot of locals in, not only seniors but juniors, and kind of, you know, setting a tone that they really wanted to start this next class really hot, especially with the locals. And now it feels like everything's been had the brakes put on them. And I feel like that hurts them a little more than maybe some of the outside poachers. Is that how you see it?
I mean, I would say the fact that it just came now, especially off the heels of the dead period. I think the fact that just with that combination, it really stopped a lot of guys from being able to take a lot of key visits. So, you know, March, April, that's when a lot of guys are able to go out and check a lot of suitors, and that's why you're able to see a lot of guys that are able to make spring and early summer commitments. So I think the biggest impact, not just for Maryland, more so just the entire landscape of college football recruiting now, you're just going to see a lot less guys committing. I will say, I do know for a fact that it did negatively hurt Maryland. There was a chance that they were going to add a pretty big commitment, but the fact that the prospect was no longer able to take visits, that kind of set him back, and, you know, guys are kind of now sitting back and kind of reassessing, and kind of no one's in a rush to make a decision right now. So I would say it does halt momentum a little bit, but at the end of the day, every program in the country is going through this. So if it affects Maryland, it's going to affect every program in some way or form. It's not like another school will be able to bring them on campus, so I guess maybe that's what's just overlining us.
Yeah, no, I get that. It just feels like Maryland might have had a little bit of recruiting momentum, at least on the home front here, that feels like it's been pretty well nipped in the bud.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely possible. You know, we had mentioned that Caleb Williams was a guy that was actually supposed to visit, and then obviously everything with the coronavirus shut that down, so he wasn't able to make it up. That was going to be a pretty, even though it was going to be low key, it was going to be actually a pretty big visit, one of the last shots for Maryland. So that did not take place, and with things kind of in limbo, he was a big piece. So if Maryland was able to maybe reverse course and make a 180 with him, it's a very, very big possibility that they would be able to regain some momentum.
Okay, do you have any info that's worth sharing at this point, or is everything just kind of in stasis?
I mean, honestly, at this point, there's a lot of guys that are just, like I said, just kind of waiting. I know Maryland's sitting in a good spot with a number of key targets. So we're actually, we have a piece up on the site, just kind of assessing stock ups, down, neutral on a handful of targets. So, so we'll see, but nothing concrete. It seems like everything is just kind of dying down right now.
Yeah, Ahmed's been cranking stuff out on the InsideMarylandSports.com message boards. You do want to check that stuff out if you care about recruiting, as well you should, because Maryland football, once they get on the field, is usually not nearly as fun as the way that they recruit at this point. So the only other football thing I wanted to bring up was my boy, my guy from my years at Maryland, EJ Henderson, has been elected to the College Football Hall of Fame. And I tell you what, if you have not, if you're one of the younger generation who did not get a chance to watch EJ play live, this guy was one of the most dominant people I've ever seen play the game of football in college. I mean, he just ate people. And from the middle linebacker spot, he just was all over everybody. He was in the backfield. He was on the sidelines. He was just a giant, just a big guy who really wasn't like straight line fast, but just had a level of quicks and a level of football IQ and instincts that was just really just ahead of his time, and just really happy for him to have made it. Go to YouTube and find some of those games and watch some EJ Henderson, especially that Peach Bowl against Tennessee. Watch what he does to Jason Witten. That'll remind you how good he was in college. But congrats to EJ. And guys, that's it. Everything's in stasis. Everything's been canceled or postponed. I don't even have like a women's golf joke to make because they're not playing either. And you know, I guess we're gonna come back and we're gonna do podcasts, and maybe we can set up some interviews or do some kind of evergreen stuff, or whenever there's news, maybe he sticks aside that he's inspired by our podcast tonight and he wants to come back for his junior season. We'll come back and talk about that, or any other news that breaks in the meantime.
His top 10 junior season.
If Sticks wants to come, look, Jalen, if you're listening, if you want to come on this program and argue with me about whether you coming back will make Maryland a top 10 program, I am all ears. All right. All in on that. Like I said, if Anthony Cowan gets that fifth year and wants to come back, also fine with that. But yeah, if any news breaks, we'll be back. Keep an eye out for us. We'll be on the InsideMarylandSports.com message boards, Facebook, Twitter, you name it. There are plenty of ways to get a hold of us. Suggestions for things you might want to hear during this downtime, let us know. And until then, keep an eye out for us on your podcast provider. We are on Facebook. We are on Twitter. You're all over the InsideMarylandSports.com message boards or IMS Radio, and we're suspended just like everybody else. We'll see you next time.